From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'm Joe Palca. For the rest of this hour, we'll be talking about beer. But not just any beer, we're going to talk about crisp lager beer. Now, this refreshing beverage doesn't go as far back as the wines of the Romans or the ales of Charlemagne's time. Experts say lager didn't bubble up until the Middle Ages, and that's because it's not brewed like wines or ales. Cool brewing lager beer takes a whole different yeast. My next guest has been using modern technology to take a closer look at that lager yeast, research that gives us a better idea of its history. And it might even help modern brewers develop better recipes. Joining me now is Gavin Sherlock. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Genetics at Stanford University's School of Medicine in Palo Alto, California. Welcome to the program, Dr. Sherlock.
Thank you for having me.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And I guess the first question would be, was it beer that drove you to yeast or yeast that drove you to beer?
Well, a little bit of both. But my lab uses yeast as a model organism for studying evolution. And in this respect, lager yeast presented a really interesting opportunity to look at evolutionary history and very recent evolutionary history of the lager yeast itself.
I see. There's two ways to start. We can start about the genetics or we can start about the beer. And since it's probably a broader interest, let's at least start a little bit about beer. What is the role of yeast in brewing beer?
So yeast is capable of fermenting sugars to alcohol. And that's, the main job it has either in lager or ale or winemaking. But in addition, there's a lot of secondary metabolism where a lot of compounds that are present in the fermentation will be converted into other compounds that then impart flavors to the particular beverage.
So it's both alcohol and taste?
Yes, most definitely.
And so what is the difference then between the beer the yeast that you use to make an ale versus the yeast that you use to make a lager?
So the ale yeast is the normal species of yeast that we know about called Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is also the same species used for baking and for winemaking as well. The lager yeast, on the other hand, is a hybrid between two different yeast species. So in the same way that a mule is a hybrid between a horse and a donkey, the lager yeast is a hybrid between Saccharomyces cerevisiae and then another yeast called Saccharomyces byanus.
And how did this hybrid come about? Or maybe the other question is, when did it come about?
So lager brewing itself probably arose late in the Middle Ages, so probably sometime in the 1400s. So these two different yeast species are able to mate with one another to produce these hybrids. So the most likely explanation for what happened is that these two yeasts happened to be co-resident in a place where they were brewing ales and mated, and then I guess the monks or whoever was making the ale discovered that they were getting a new type of beer, and so they would have selected for this yeast, and this yeast would have been the lager yeast, which is this hybrid.
And is there a difference in the amount of sugar that the different yeasts can convert? I mean, is there a more alcoholic lager than ale, or are they both limited to about a few percent?
They both tend to be a few percent, probably slightly less alcohol in the lagers than in the ales. One of the key differences, though, is that lager is brewed at cooler temperatures, and that's one of the reasons why you end up with a very different flavor. Because you get less of these molecules called esters and less of these fusel alcohols that you find in ales. So lager has this kind of much more clean and crisp taste and aroma.
So what's the genetic signature of this mating that took place in 200 or 300 years ago or 400 years ago?
So what we did was to try to take a number of existing lager strains and look to see which part of the original parental genomes do they still have resident within them. To do this, we used something called microarrays.
Uh-huh.
And you can think of this, it's like a glass microscope slide, but it has, in our case, about 12,000 spots on it. And each spot contains a tiny piece of DNA corresponding to a particular location in one of those two genomes. And then we take the DNA from a given lager yeast, we label it with a red dye, put it onto this microarray, and then those spots which turn red will allow us to determine which sequences were present. And so we did this for 17 different lager strains. And when we looked at the data, it was striking that they split into two quite clearly distinct groups. Some of them seemed to contain nearly all of the Cerevisiae ambionis genomes, whereas the first group contains nearly all of the Bionis genome, but it's lost a lot of the Cerevisiae genome.
Interesting. And is the yeast that is being used today similar to the one that was first arose when this new species arose?
It's difficult to know how much it has changed over the, I guess, probably 500 or 600 years since it arose. So firstly, we believe that there was actually probably two origins of lager yeast. That resulted in what we observed as these two distinct groups. And it's difficult to know how similar to the original kind of hybrid that was generated 600 or so years ago the present strains are. We suspect that that over the past 600 years they've lost some genes from some of the genomes, which probably reflects selection by the brewers for yeasts that they particularly liked the beer that was produced from them.
Okay, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And we're talking about the genetics and the taste, I suppose, but the genetics of yeast and the taste of yeast, or at least the beer that yeast make. And we're taking your calls, and let's take a call now from David in Nashville, Tennessee. David, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. It's a fascinating subject. Something I learned in biology class was that the yeast organism never dies. Can you verify that or not?
Question.
Yeast most certainly does die. So yeast can divide both asexually as well as sexually, and the typical mode by which they're dividing in a fermentation vessel is asexually. However, an individual yeast cell, although it buds off new cells, has the ability to divide, you know, only a limited number of times. So as the yeast cells get older, they get larger, they're kind of less able to metabolize, and then probably after, you know, less than two dozen generations, they eventually die. So no, they don't live forever.
So David, I think this means you have to go back to your biology teacher and
But he still explained that still, because in the survival for, you know, to make the humans, you know, live 150, 175 years, you know, maybe 100 years from now, that is, they've done a lot of study on the yeast organism because of that reason. Maybe not forever, but you have to admit that's a lot, you know, that's a lot of generations.
Possibly so. Well, maybe they have something to learn about, teach us about longevity. Let's take another call now, and this time we'll go to Matt in Golden, Colorado. Ooh, that's a place for beer. Matt in Golden, Colorado, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, my question, I guess, is similar to Dave's. I just heard recently about the amber that they were able to extract yeast from, and how did they know that they had a strain that would be able to produce beer out of that?
Gee, I think I missed this story, but maybe Gavin Sherlock knows about it.
I do. There's a company called Fossil Fuel Brewing Company, and they identified an insect embedded in an amber, and within its guts, they were able to find a yeast which they've been able to brew beer from. They propose that this yeast may actually be an ancient yeast rather than a modern contaminant, and actually I would be enormously interested to do some microarray analysis on that yeast.
Fantastic.
If anyone from that company is listening, we'd be happy to look at it for them.
Wow, that's great. Well, maybe we make the connection for you, but but the idea is that you would only need one or two cells from this yeast in order to restore the population, because since they split asexually, you could grow them out.
Exactly. You can generate populations of millions of yeast in a very short amount of time.
All right, interesting. Let's take another call now and go to Ken in Cleveland, Ohio. Ken, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thanks. Good program.
Uh-huh.
I had a couple questions. One is how do I mean, basically, all yeast comes from the wild, okay? I mean, from the air. Originally, there's yeast and spores and everything all around us, and it comes from there. Now, when beer yeast or other kinds of yeast are cultivated, how do they separate out? How do they tell the good yeast from the bad? The second question is, how good of a microscope or what kind of a microscope would you need to actually see yeast cells and be able to see, well, here's a good yeast cell and here's one I don't want?
Okay, interesting. Thanks for that, Ken. What about that? How do you keep your strains of yeast the way you want them to be?
So most industrial fermentations, both for wine and brewing, will use yeasts from commercial vendors. So you can buy, very similar to the way that you would buy Fleischmann's yeast for baking, you can pick a particular strain that maybe you like the characteristics of the drink that it produces, and they'll send it to you, and you add it to your fermentation. And, you know, they use modern microbiological techniques to do that, and so it's going to be guaranteed to be a single type of yeast, which is the one that they advertise it as. Now, in terms of distinguishing good yeasts and bad yeasts under the microscope, you really can't do it just by looking at them under the microscope. I mean, there's some small, subtle morphological differences under the microscope, but you really have to do some more specific tests, either look at, you know, what particular media they might grow on, what sugars they might be able to use. Nowadays, we'd probably opt for some more kind of genomic-oriented technologies, looking at some DNA sequences, for instance.
All right. We're talking about the genetics of yeast with Gavin Sherlock from the Stanford University School of Medicine. I'm Joe Palca, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. So does this work give you any ideas about how you might want to use breed yeast or put certain traits into yeast that you might make for a better tasting beer?
Well, so one of the things about the lager yeast being a hybrid yeast is that it's sterile in the same way that a mule is sterile. So it's much harder to do genetics on, so we can't do lots of mating experiments to generate a better lager yeast in that way. The other alternative would be, for instance, do recombinant DNA type strategy on it. So that would be either introducing or deleting genes. I strongly doubt that the brewing industry is going to want to use genetically modified. there's a lot.
Frankenbeer? Is that what you're worried about?
I think there's so much good beer out there that why would we even go down that road?
Well, okay, I take your point. let's take another call now from Isaac in Rochester, New York. Isaac, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is a very fascinating conversation. The question, I want to go back to your guest mentioned a while back that lagers and ales tend to have a lower, about the same alcohol percentage content across the board, but I've run into some in microbreweries that have had like 11-12%. I'm just curious what your guests thought about that. I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Isaac. Yeah, what about that? I've seen that too.
So some, obviously, it's like an arms race between brewers in terms of who can produce the greatest amount of alcohol in a given beer. And it is possible to sometimes get up to a very high alcohol content. It depends on how much sugar is in the initial kind of liquor that's used for the fermentation, and then whether they have any additional secondary fermentations. But the typical brew is more like, you know, between 3-5%.
So they could do it, but it would be a more of an artificial situation rather than something they would make as a major production run kind of thing.
Yes, I think so.
I see. Well, I guess I should ask. I mean, have you a brewing background yourself, or are you strictly coming at it as a consumer and a geneticist?
Other than a few brewing experiments in college, I would classify myself very much as a consumer.
And then the next question, then, since I can detect from your accent that you might have started on beer in a different part of the world, care to jump in on the question of whether the lagers of America are better or worse than the lagers of Europe or in England?
I actually don't drink so much lager. I'm more of an ale person. But if I drink lager, probably my favorite actually is an American, which is the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. That's an ale.
Yeah.
Lagers? No, I tend not to drink lagers. I certainly don't drink Budweiser or Miller or anything like that.
I see. But presumably, I mean, Budweiser and Miller, they fight all the time about the various tastes that they have. But are the yeasts the same, or do they really have a different strain that they're dealing with?
For the most part, modern breweries, I think, have very similar strains, although I don't think you can just ask them for their strain for analysis. I think they're probably quite proprietary about it.
Yeah.
I think the major determinant is going to be what they actually put into the fermentation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe some small differences in their actual process.
Got it. Okay, let's take another call now, and this time go to Dan in Hartford, Connecticut. Dan, welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, hello. How are you?
Good.
I'm a brewer and malter myself. Been in the business for 12 years. Started in Germany. And somebody had asked earlier about how the yeast strains are separated there. And breweries, when the primary fermentation is over, they just harvest the yeast. And on a lager style, the yeast settles on the bottom. The lowermost layer is dead or not suitable for brewing, and they just scrape the top off and reuse it. And with ales, which are top fermenting and swim on the top, it's much easier to harvest. You just kind of scoop it off the top. And there are quite a few breweries that are just reusing the same yeast from batch to batch. So in some of these older breweries, especially in Belgium and in England and Germany, you have some very old yeast strains that have just been used considerably. And I'm sure they're changing over time, but they're still being used. So the flavors may have changed, the esters may have changed, but the yeast strain itself is basically untouched.
Okay, well, thanks for that call. Unfortunately, that's going to have to be the final word because we've run out of time. Gavin Sherlock, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Gavin Sherlock is an assistant professor in the Department of Genetics at Stanford University School of Medicine in Palo Alto, California. This program is produced by Christopher Intagliata and senior producer Annette Heist. Charles Bergquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Our intern is Molly Ashford. Josh Rogerson is our technical director, and he's at the controls here in New York City. We also had help in Second Life from Lynn Collins, Dave Andrews, Jeff Corbin, and the University of Denver. If you want to write to us, how about email? The address is scifry@npr.org. For NPR News in New York, I'm Joe Palca.